Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
It's time to talk about early pro football teams again, and we're going to go back to one of the original APFA teams. Yes, the start of the NFL, and one of the best teams in that first year is the Akron Pros, and Ken Crippen joins us to tell us all about them coming up in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and we are in our early pro football team segment. We have one of the most successful early pro football teams, at least in the NFL or the APFA, the Akron Pros we're going to be talking about tonight. And we have our historian friend, Ken Crippen, here to join us once again, who is very knowledgeable on these early pro teams, and we appreciate him being here. Ken Crippen, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Last time we spoke, we talked about the Tonawanda Cardex Lumbermen. And this time we're talking about the Akron Pros, who had a little bit longer tenure in pro football than the Lumbermen did.
Yeah, a few more games than just the one that Tonawanda played.
That's for sure. I definitely have the record for the shortest lived pro football experience, I think, though.
Absolutely.
Where do we begin, I guess, with the Akron Pros?
You would start back in 1908. With them, they were actually called the Akron Indians at that time. They were a semi-pro team. They started off, they did pretty well. They won the city championship that year. And they were pretty strong throughout the early years that they were in existence.
Oh, okay. So the Akron Indians, does that have any connections to any of the other Indians teams? Like in particular, I'm thinking like the Cleveland Indians had a football team early on there.
That I don't think so. No, there is another Akron Indians team, which is sort of connected, that played in the 1920s. So, but we can talk about that a little bit later.
Okay. I'll give the floor to you. Please tell us about how the Indians progressed from there.
Like I was saying, they won the city championship in 1908, had a pretty decent season in 1909. They actually tied for the state championship with the Shelby Blues. Another Ohio team. And then, you know, they won the championship a few years later. Basically, George Peggy Perrott, he came in 1912 to coach the team. He immediately changed the name to Perrott's Indians. And then they went and won the championship in 1913, and then turned around and won it again in 1914. Both of those years, they... first year, they only lost one game. The second year, they lost two. So they did pretty well.
Maybe just to have some clarification. Okay, we're talking about a couple different championships. First, we're talking about the City of Akron's championship in 1908 when they were the Indians. Is that correct?
That's correct. And then they moved on to the state championship, the last two that I mentioned.
Okay, I gotcha. So they're the Ohio State champions with the Peggy Perrott Indians, or correct? That's what they were called?
They were called Perrott's Indians.
Perrott's Indians. Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. All right, so Peggy Perrott's in charge here, winning some championships. Things are going pretty good for the Indians team.
Yeah, they were going pretty good, and as a result, other teams were getting a little jealous. And so what they did was, especially the Massillon Tigers and the Canton Bulldogs, both teams that were playing in the same area, obviously. 1915, they came in and just pretty much stole all of Perrott's best players. So he ended up going only one win that season, lost four, tied two. So Perrott got fed up with that, and he actually left and went to the Cleveland Tigers. So that was it as far as Perrott's tenure with the team. Then in 1916, they kind of reorganized. Howard Welsh came in. He was a football player with Case University, brought in two of his brothers, Stephen and Charles. For people who are boxing fans, they'll probably recognize Stephen under his name, Suey. He was a famous boxing promoter and manager. He's in the Boxing Hall of Fame. And the brother Charles as well became a pretty well-known boxing promoter. But the three of them came in and reorganized the team in 1916. And then they also were able to get a sponsor at that point, Burkhart Brewing Company. There were two brothers in there, Gus and Bill, if I remember correctly, Burkhart. So they sponsored the team, and they actually renamed the team the Akron Burkharts for that season.
Wow, it makes you, with a brewery being in charge of your team, wonder what your pay was. You'd get a froth of beer or something maybe after the game, huh?
Yeah, if you did well, get a few six-packs, maybe a half a keg or something.
There you go. Sounds like a good incentive to me. Liking this team more and more, all the more here. Okay. So we're at 1916 now with them taking over?
That's correct, 1916. And they were only named the Akron Burkharts for that 1916 team.
That would be tough to put on a jersey sweater, wouldn't it, the Burkharts?
It probably would, yeah. It'd probably just be like the Bees or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's what most of the teams that just had that single letter on there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
No, they wouldn't have anything. Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. They had some crazy uniforms back then, that's for sure. Okay, so what happened in 1916?
All right, 1916, yeah, they had a decent season. They won 7 games, but really nothing to speak of. So then the Burkharts no longer sponsored the team. That's when Stephen Welsh and Mac McGinnis, they bought the team and they named them the Akron Pros. And that's pretty much the name that had stuck after that. Now, one of the biggest things that happened during that offseason is they brought in Al Nesser, one of the famous Nesser brothers. They were pretty much hired guns that went around playing in a lot of the Ohio teams. So Al was definitely one that jumped around to a lot of teams, playing with multiple teams in the same season.
Is this the same Nessers, the brothers that played for the Columbus Panhandles in that era?
Correct. Okay. Yeah, so you'd see them with the Canton Bulldogs and Massillon Tigers and Columbus Panhandles. And Al, when he started playing, when the NFL formed, he was jumping around to a bunch of different teams as well, won a couple of championships. But Al came in and they did pretty well. They went 6-2 that first season of 1917. And then they had to disband temporarily because of World War One. So taking off the 1918 season, then came back in 1919. They did take the name the Indians again. This time, Stephen Welsh, he was out. So Ralph Waldsmith, Art Ranney, and Park Crisp came in to take over and run the team as the owners. And all of them were former players of Akron at one time. So they moved up to ownership and started playing for the team. And then once they got toward 1920 is when Fritz Pollard came in, Hall of Fame back, played with a few teams in what's now the NFL, APFA at the time. And they really started coming together at that point. And that 1920 season is that historic season, that winning that first championship in the APFA, now the NFL.
If we remember right, there is not any championship games in the APFA or the early NFL. It was pretty much by who was had the best record. Is that fair to say?
Not necessarily the best record. And what happened was during the off season, after the season was completed, they would have a league meeting and they would actually take a vote to see who would be the champion for that season. So a lot of times what ended up happening is toward the end of the season, you would get some scrub teams that you would play just to kind of pad your record to make things look better. But yeah, the first several years, there were no championship games. It was all based off of a vote at the league meetings during the offseason.
So I take it they had to have met the Canton Bulldogs at some point that year, 1920, to take this championship. And how did they fare against them?
Did pretty well. There were some games that, let's see if I can remember correctly. I know they did have a 7-0 game over them. They also had a 10-0 game over them. So there wasn't high scoring at that point, but Akron did beat them the two times that they did play them that year.
Wow, they're shutting out. Jim Thorpe is on that team, and they're keeping them scoreless. That's pretty impressive.
Well, what's really impressive is that when they played the APFA opponents, the entire season they only gave up 7 points.
Wow. Do you happen to know who the 7 points were scored with?
It was the Cleveland Tigers.
Oh, okay.
The game that they played them, and they actually tied them that game, but that was the only points that they gave up to APFA opponents.
Oh, I wonder if Peggy Perrott, he has still been with them at that point with the Tigers?
No, he was gone at that point.
No, he's gone. Yeah, he's getting a little long in a tooth probably by then.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Father Time wins every time, so.
Yep, absolutely.
Unless your name's Tom Brady.
And you still got another 30 or 40 years.
That's right. Okay, so they win the first championship. What is the honor of winning that first APFA championship?
There was theoretically a trophy that was given out for that. I know that a lot of people have been trying to search for that trophy. I don't think it's ever surfaced, so don't know what happened to it. But there was a... they call it a loving cup. So it's essentially, looked like a bowl on a stand, similar to the Stanley Cup, but a lot shorter. But that was what was given out for the first champion. And then they would just give it to the next champion and next champion, et cetera.
Oh, okay. So do you know how long this cup lasted before it sort of disappeared, I guess?
That I don't know. I know that they knew about its existence until the 1960s, I think. They obviously were not giving it out every year until then, but I think its last known existence was in the early 60s. But as far as that championship itself, it was for the first several years, and then I'm not sure what happened to it after that. I don't think they were giving that out. I think they were giving out some other items. I know that the teams themselves would give out some items, usually some sort of fob or something that you could wear around your neck. And that was usually the things that the teams would give out.
Okay. So there wasn't like a championship ring, that didn't come until the Super Bowl era?
Yeah, it was definitely much later. I know that into the 40s and stuff, some teams were making up some rings. But yeah, that's not something that was done back in the 20s or 30s.
Hey, if it would have been a few years earlier, they would have maybe got that keg of beer from the brewery, but they were no longer sponsors of the team. Okay, so what happened with the pros after their 1920 championship team?
They were continuing to play 1921, not doing too bad. Then they would start falling off after that. So once you started getting into, say, like the 1922s and beyond that, that's when it started getting a little worse for them. Toward the middle to end of that decade is when it was definitely a problem. So they're facing financial issues. And in 1927, they actually folded. So 1926 was the last year that they were playing. And then 1927, they never fielded a team.
Yeah, it seems like 1927 was a year that a lot of these early pro teams sort of had to, cease their operations with it. I've heard that on a couple different occasions. Is that maybe because that's when the NFL was starting to think about, hey, we got to get out of these smaller towns and get into the bigger cities like Chicago and start thinking about New York and things like that? Is that possibly some of the reasons?
Some of it, yeah. I mean, they were really having difficulty because they had the American Football League in 1926, and it really caused some financial problems for the NFL. So then at that point, the NFL, they had expanded so much. There were a lot of different teams. A lot of them really were not financially stable. And so after having to go against the American Football League, they kind of realized that, maybe we should kind of condense a little bit so we could have some stronger teams, more financially solvent teams going forward. So that's when a lot of them dropped out at that point.
That's right. Okay. I forgot about the American Football League. That's Red Grange's American Football League. And that's only 2 years removed from when he sort of built the NFL up on that barnstorming tour and gave a lot of popularity to teams, especially the Giants, getting them some record crowds and some popularity. So yeah, I didn't even think of that. That's a good point. Mm-hmm. Good point. Who were some of the, maybe some of the stars of those Akron Pro teams? I know you talked about Fritz Pollard a little bit about the Nessers, but who are some of the other players maybe that we would recognize through history?
Not necessarily ones that people may recognize. I mean, some of the people on there were like Rip King. He was playing, did very well. The thing is that you'd had a lot of other teams that had the name players, but Akron is the one that really was able to get the team put together and win. So I guess they did it without a lot of the superstars that you would have on some of the other teams.
Now, what would do you think would be some of the incentive for players to want to play for Akron over some of the other teams? I mean, you have Jim Thorpe. It's like, you know, just down the road in Canton. You know, I know Maslin wasn't in the APFA, but they had some great teams outside of the APFA, and you had a lot of competition. Cleveland's not far away, and, you know, Columbus. So what would be the incentive to want to play in Akron, do you think?
Most of the time, it just came down to money. Whoever would offer you the most amount of money, that's who you would play for. Just following the paychecks. And that's why you'd have people jumping from team to team. And when the NFL formed, that was one of the things that they wanted to try to stamp out, is people jumping from team to team. Well, they weren't necessarily successful in the beginning, but that's one of the reasons why they wanted to form the league, was to try to keep people from playing for one team on one day, then move and play for another team on another day. I mean, you can talk about the Buffalo All-Americans and the Union Club down in Phoenixville, just outside Philadelphia. They would play games in Philadelphia on Saturdays, play in Buffalo on Sundays, and just keep going back and forth. So it was definitely a problem even in the early years of the NFL when they theoretically wanted to stamp it out.
Hey, you're getting two paychecks on the weekend. That's not too bad, you know, after working all week. That's not a bad payday for those guys. Pretty smart. Now, okay, the Phoenixville. Now, we had Scott Ferguson Green on talking about the Phoenixville Union Club about a little over a month ago. And he was telling us that 1920 season, of course, Phoenixville was not part of the APFA, but they had some independent games, one against Canton, one against these Akron Pros. And Scott claims that they defeated both of those teams. Have you heard that same story?
That I did not know. That's something I would probably have to take a closer look at. But I know that, you know, they were playing teams back and forth, and sometimes you may get a little confused because the roster for Buffalo and the roster for Union were pretty much the same. So, but yeah, I do know that Buffalo would definitely played against Akron right after the same people played for the Union Club. So, it's definitely not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah. I thought that was, I've never heard that before. I'm like, wow, that's pretty big news when you have a team that they beat both those powerhouses from the APFA, but of course they're just getting started there. And so the independent teams were probably no worse for the wear than teams from the league at that time, because it was just getting started. So very interesting. What do you think is the biggest legacy that the Akron Pros leave for professional football?
Well, you had that historic season in 1920, but then also, you know, you've got some players, you know, like Fritz Pollard coming in, one of the first African-American players in the NFL. So multiple items of history within that first year. Unfortunately, they didn't stick around for very long to really have a lasting impact on the NFL itself. A lot of the players would end up going to other teams, like Nesser. You know, he'd play for Akron, then go play for several other teams. But I would say that historic first season is something that, you know, people should definitely pay attention to and realize that, you know, they put their foot on the NFL in the very beginning, and they should be remembered for that.
Yeah, hear, hear. You know, the first National Football League champions, really, if you come to think about it, if you consider the APFA years, their two seasons as the NFL, because it was the predecessor of the NFL. Just a renaming is all it was. So, yeah, that's a great legacy to leave, that's for sure. Now, can you tell us any more about Fritz Pollard? I mean, he's an interesting character, but it's, I guess, especially pertaining to the pros. What positions would Pollard have played for the pros?
He was mainly in the backfield. So he played the multiple positions, the wing back, you know, the blocking back, what you would kind of call a quarterback too. So he was all in the backfield. Plus, you know, he was also a coach. He was the first African-American coach in NFL history. So he was incredible. I mean, it's hard to put words into his abilities and what he was able to do in the backfield. Plus, then you add in what he did as a coach, and there's a reason why he's in the Hall of Fame. It's because of his abilities.
Yeah, boy, if you can have put an extra coach out there and have one on the field with you, that's a big advantage, as we see, you know, happening sometimes in today's games, where you have somebody that's really knowledgeable. So especially when you have a super athlete like Pollard must have been, because you read so much about him, and everybody wanted him because he played on multiple different teams in those early pro teams. So that's quite a testament to his athleticism, that's for sure.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, he did play for the Union Club in 1920 as well. So Akron Pros and Union Club.
So he was, maybe that's how they beat him. Pollard said, "Hey, I'm going over to these guys in Phoenixville."
It's very possible.
Take the best player off the roster and put him on the other one. Very interesting. Very interesting. I mean, that's a pretty interesting story of the Akron Pros, and we appreciate you talking about that. Now, I want everybody to know what a treasure your website is. And maybe if you could tell us a little bit about, you know, I'm going to put a link to it for the listeners, but maybe if you could tell us where to go to and what all we can find on your website.
Well, you can go to kencrippen.com, C-R-I-P-P-E-N. And I'm trying to put out there a lot of the research that I've done over the years. I've been doing this for over 30 years at this point. And so there are things that don't necessarily fall into articles that I've written. So I want to get a lot of research out there, some box scores. I've also working with Matt Reeser. I've done a lot of historical pro football scouting reports. So this is basically where we go in and analyze players based off of their game film and kind of give them the same grades that you would see for the college students coming out. Give the same grades for the professional careers of a lot of the older players. And so we spent a lot of time going through and creating some of those reports. And so that type of information is there. You should have some links to some of the articles I've written, some other exclusive content that hasn't been published anywhere else. So there's a lot of different things that you can get from that website.
Yeah, I highly encourage listeners, because that's how I just happened to be going through doing some research, trying to find some information on the Akron Pros, and your article came up on them, which is a fantastic article, by the way. So make sure listeners go to kencrippen.com and check out that Akron Pros article he has on, amongst the other things. But these scouting reports are extremely interesting. I was looking at a few of those the other day. And where do you find, like, who's the oldest player on there that you did a scouting report on? Do you know offhand?
Laverne Dilwig. So this was from a game in 1929, or was it in the early 30s, in somewhere in that area. They were playing, the Packers were playing the Giants. And so we were able to see some game film of Laverne Dilwig, who I believe belongs in the Hall of Fame.
So I guess, tell us a little bit about him, if you can.
Incredibly quick. If you see him on the film, he was incredibly quick off the ball, and he was so fast that not only could he hit a runner in the backfield, but he would also drop back into pass coverage. And so he had 27 interceptions from a defensive end position.
Wow.
Imagine that. To defensive end position having 27 interceptions. That's how fast he was. So your consensus All-Pro, he was 6 times consecutive. Unanimous, he was 4 times consecutive. He was All-Decade Team, made All-Pro every year except for his last year. Pretty much led every statistical category of the statistics that we know from those early days. There's no question he was the second best end behind Don Hudson, and that's the only reason why people don't really know him is because he was followed by Don Hudson. But everything else, nobody in the pre-modern era as an end came close to him. All the people that are in the Hall of Fame as pre-modern era ends, none of them came close. Give you an idea on the interceptions. Don Hudson had 30 interceptions for his career, but he was a defensive back. He wasn't playing defensive end. 3 less interceptions from a defensive end position.
And you think about it, the passing game was a much smaller percentage of the offensive plays run in that era compared to today. I think it's like a 65-35 split, I think, something right now in the pro game. It was probably the other way around back in that era, or even worse. You know, wow, that is tremendous.
Exactly. And they weren't long passes either. They were more short passes. But yeah, I mean, just to have that kind of an impact on both off the offense and defense, because statistically he was the offensive end. So he was catching passes, catching touchdowns, intercepting. He did it all.
And this is for the late 20s Packers, you're saying?
Late 20s, early 30s Packers. So the three-peat, the first time they did the three-peat, he was on those teams.
Okay, you know, I think I was watching, we had Mike Moran on talking about his father, Hap Moran, and he had some game film of the 29, I think it was the 1929 Giants against the Packers. I did see some of his inaction of with the Packers on watching some of that game film.
Yeah, that was the game film that we looked at.
Okay, all right. So I am familiar with that. Yeah, he's a tremendous player. Yeah, just think about that in today's, that'd be like J.J. Watt having 27 interceptions. You know, you wouldn't think that would ever happen.
Correct.
So wow, that's quite an athlete. That's for sure. Okay, well. Well, make sure, folks, we go there to kencrippen.com and check out some of these great players that Ken's writing about in his cohorts there. So, because this is some really good stuff. And we're going to have to get you on. I have a few other things that I may want to talk to you about and have you come on, because there's some really good things on there that I'd like to have you share with us.
I'd be happy to be back anytime.
All right. Well, thank you very much, my friend. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
At the Sports History Network, we're all about sports yesteryear, and so we're so pleased to introduce you to Row One, an online memorabilia gallery and shop that brings your sports history to life anywhere. The Row One gallery includes over 5,200 gorgeously reproduced prints of team posters, game program covers, game tickets, advertisements, and more in baseball, pro and college football, pro and college basketball, and more. And any gallery item may be printed in a variety of sizes on wood, metal, canvas, acrylic, or poster paper. And in Row One shop, check out the thousands more of unique items with a retro and historical designs dating back to 1876, including t-shirts, long sleeve shirts, phone cases, mugs, blankets, pillows, towels, and even shower curtains. Go to sportshistorynetwork.com, ROW number one, for access to the full Row One catalog and for gallery prints and gift items. Plus get a 15% discount off all prints on the Row One Pictorum Gallery with coupon code SHN15. Follow the link on the show notes. Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sports sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcast. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.